Can I add my thanks to Jimmy for organizing this and can I add my thanks to Jimmy for organizing this and also to my fellow readers. This has been, we all know each other, but we know each other in a much more intimate and interesting way tonight after hearing one another read. I'm going to just read a few poems. I moved to Pittsburgh from New York City, and I knew nothing about labor or the class system in America, even though I and my family were very much part of that. And I started to write poems about working class people who were barely making it in Nevada, which is where my mother's family was from. And I'm going to read a couple of those. I'm going to read one old poem that's set there and then one new piece. We lived in a small town that was not far from Reno and Las Vegas, where during the 1950s, the military industrial complex, as we used to call it in the 60s, was testing the atom bomb. And this is about that, and it's also about the replacement of an old technology, mining, which is how Nevada came to be, with a new technology, the bomb, the planet Krypton. By the way, this poem did not have an epigraph, but now it does, and Marianne just gave it to me. And the epigraph is, I do not want to be a woman in the next life. The planet Krypton. Outside the window, the McGill smelter sent a red dust down on the smoking yards of copper, on the railroad tracks' frayed ends, disappearing into the congestion of the afternoon. Nevada lay dull and scuffed, a miner's boot toe worn away, dim, while my mother knelt before the radio to coax the detonation from its static. From the Las Vegas Tonopah artillery and gunnery range, the sound of the atom bomb came biting like a swarm of bees. We sat in the hot Nevada dark, delighted when the switch was tripped and the bomb hoisted up its silky, hooded, glittering, uncoiling length. It hissed and spit. It sizzled like a poker in a toddy. The bomb was no mind and all body, and it sent a fire of static down the spine. In the dark, it glowed like the coils of an electric stove. It stripped every leaf from every branch until a willow by a creek was a bouquet of switches, resinous, naked, flexible, and fine. Bathed in the light of K-Down Las Vegas, my crouched mother looked radioactive, swampy, green, like something from the planet Krypton. And in the suave and brilliant wattage of the bomb, we were not poor. In the atoms' fizz and pop, we heard possibility uncorked, taffeta wraps whispered on Davenports, and a new planet bloomed above us. In its light, even the stumps of cut pine gleamed like dinner plates. The world was beginning all over again, fresh and hot, and we could have all of it we wanted. There are two small things I want to say about this next piece, which is actually in prose. And I did teach for a very long time, and I had an exercise that I would give, especially beginning students, to write a poem about the first house they could ever remember living in, because most people who are coming to poetry for the first time think that their lives are beneath notice. And it was a really interesting way to invite people to pay attention to their lives. And I used that exercise until one day a young woman, a student, raised her hand and said, "I grew up in a car." And then I stopped using that. But it's also ironic because I grew up in hotels, and this is one of them. It was owned by my mother's father and mother, my grandparents, and it was a place. This is also about the about movies and the movies that were so present in the 1940s and 50s called film noir. And it's about the way in which my whole life was present and recorded and documented and archived in those movies, so that it wasn't just a work of art for me. It was a documentary. In it, I could behold, in the noir movies, I could behold everything that I had beheld. The lobbies and hallways were tiled with black and white linoleum and lit with dim sconces. Each room contained an iron bedstead, a deal dresser, a sink. The windows decked out with sinister jaundiced roll-up blinds. I saw this room time and again at the movies, where the camera seemed to be waiting for me in those empty rooms. My mother was out of work, and we were living in one of the hotel's vacancies. There was the whitewashed bedspread with a headboard whose iron bars had a Romanesque curve, a chenille spread nearly bald from my picking at the threads, and a dish filled with pinion nuts on that deal dresser. I loved the idleness of my life at that time. I was not bothered by having to play with other children. There were no other children. I was deliriously alone and surrounded by adults, and I would follow the maid on her rounds, trailing from room to room, a small and avid voyeur with a shaky handheld camera of my attentiveness. Aside from my grandmother, my mother, and the maid, I saw no women at that hotel, except for one. In her room, over the end of the unmade bed, hung a battered pair of white underpants, its core stained a deep red. The image was biblical, a shroud with a bloody mark, and the odor of the body was powerful. The maid opened a window, swabbed out the sink, and left. I was young, impressed by the way the room seemed untouchable, the way I would feel later, seeing the dioramas at the Museum of Natural History. The next day I saw that woman wearing a men's khaki pants and flannel shirt, standing in the lobby with my grandfather, who was dropping quarters into her outstretched hand. And after that, the window closes forever. Thank you.